गिरिवरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे राम 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 हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो फर्स्ट चैप्टर फोर टेक्स्ट 22 अथर्वांगी रसामासीत् सुमन्तुर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्वांगी रसामासीन्त सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्वांगी रसामासीत् सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्वांगी रसामासीत् सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्वांगी रसामासीत् सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्वांगिरसामासीत् सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः माताजी बड़ी अथर्वांगिरसामासीत् सुमन्तोर्दारुणो मुनिः इतिहास पुराणानां पिता मेरो महर्षणः अथर्व दि अथर्व वेद अंगिरसाम अंटु ऋषि अंगिरा आसीत वॉज इंटरेस्टेड सुमंतुः ऑल्सो नोन एज सुमंतु मुनि दारुणः सीरियसली डिवोटेड टू दि अथर्व वेद मुनि द सेज इतिहास पुराणानां ऑफ द हिस्टोरिकल रिकॉर्ड्स एंड द पुराणस पिता फादर मे माइन रोमहर्षणः द ऋषि रोमहर्षण ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय. ट्रांसलेशन द सुमंतु मुनि अंगिरा हु वॉज वेरी डिवोटेडली एंगेज्ड वॉज इंटरेस्टेड विद द अथर्व वेद एंड माई फादर रोमहर्षण वॉज इंटरेस्टेड विद द पुराणास एंड हिस्टोरिकल रिकॉर्ड्स. परपोर्ट In the Shruti Mantras also, it is stated that Angira Muni, who strictly followed the rigid principles of Atharva Veda, was the leader of the followers of Atharva Veda. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनदारिणं परमानंदमाधवं श्रीचैतन्यमीश्वरं वंदेहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। हाँ, ऑफर माय हम्बल ओबेसेंसेस एट द फीट ऑफ ऑल असेंबल्ड वैष्णवास असेंबल्ड इन पर्सन एंड इलेक्ट्रॉनिकली एंड बाय ऑल डिफरेंट मीन्स। सो वी नो दैट श्रील व्यासदेव एंड इट इज एक्चुअली वेरी क्लियरली इट्स डिस्क्राइब्ड इन दीज फ्यू वर्सेस लीडिंग टू दिस वर्स दैट ही डिवाइडेड द एंटायर gamut of the knowledge, the Vedic knowledge, into four parts. And so that is why he is known as Vyas. So in earlier lectures we heard that because he is dark in complexion, he is known as Krishna. Because he was born on an island to Mother Satyavati, so he is Dvaipayana. And because he divided the Vedas into four parts, therefore he is Vyas. Because Vyas actually means diameter, those of you know who Marathi or Sanskrit. And diameter divides the circle into two parts. So you have two diameters at right angle, they divide the circle into four parts. So something like that. So his full name is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. So although Vyas is a very popular surname in India, this Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, all three are first names only. It's not like first name, middle name and last name. They're all first names. They're actually glorifying his different attributes of Vyasadeva. And in this section of verses, it is personally described by Suta Goswami that actually Vyasadeva divided the Vedas into four parts. So there should not be any ambiguity, okay, where is it given in Shastras that Vyasadeva? So it's directly given in these verses. And he doesn't stop there. He says that, okay, after dividing into four parts, it was entrusted into various personalities. And here, the names of two great personalities are mentioned, unto whom some parts of these divisions were entrusted. And then we can come to that in some time. But I wanted to mention a few things about this, of course, with your permission. These Vedas have been entrusted into various rishis. Like in the earlier verse, we heard about the Paila Rishi, who got, I believe, the Rugveda, and then Vaishampayan Rishi, who got Yajurveda. I remember many years back, we had done this drama, and I was given the role of Vaishampayan Rishi, who narrates. So I had asked Shyamanand Prabhu, what dress should I wear? So he said, he's a Yajurvedi Brahman. So I said, wow, how does he know that? But it's there in Srimad Bhagavatam that he was interested with the Yajurveda. He's a Yagyik Brahman. So he said, how does a Yagyik Brahman would dress? You dress it like that. So it was quite pertinent. But I did not realize, and I was thinking that how does he know that he's a Yajurvedi Brahman? Or he's just saying like that. But it's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here now it is mentioned that the Atharva Veda was entrusted to Angira Muni, who is always engaged in various devotional service. And if you actually go few chapters later, there is a section where the description of all different sages appearing and listening to the narration given by Shukadev Goswami is there. And there, in all the various sages, one name is Angira Muni, and Srila Prabhupada goes into purport and explains in great detail about different rishis. And Prabhupada says that Angira Muni even today is performing austerities in a place known as Alokananda. And in that place he is chanting the holy names. So Prabhupada says that. So he's still there. So it is mentioned correctly here in the purport that the Atharva Veda is entrusted to him. And we will come to that point in a bit. What is the connection between Atharva Veda being given to a person who is engaged in devotional service? That's a very interesting connection, but we can think of it, we can talk about it a little later. So these all Vedas are entrusted to great rishis. Now, sometimes, most of us who have been neophytes in bhakti, whenever the word rishi comes, you know, there are two shlokas in scriptures, everyone knows them. And they are very powerful shlokas actually. One shloka is the shloka from Mahabharata, which Prabhupada says, rushir asya matam na bhinna. What is that? Na cha sau rushir yasya matam na bhinna. Na asau rushir yasya matam na bhinnam. Correct? Yeah. And Prabhupada sometimes says na asau munir yasya matam na bhinnam, sometimes na asau rushir yasya matam na bhinnam. Here the word is angira muni, angira rushi, is the same. So that word is often quoted. Meaning, you know, the neophytes very eagerly say that, you know, rishis, we don't want to talk about rishis, we only want to talk about Mahajans. Well, that's what the scriptures say. Rishis, you know, they always keep on having their independent opinion, because rishi by definition means that he has his own independent separate opinion. So, okay, basically just brush it away. And another, that's a very powerful verse. And because that verse is very powerful, you know, you need to have a lot of balance to be able to apply that verse. And that is that Devarshi Bhutap Tanuram Pitrunam Nakinkaro Nayam Runi Charajan. So all these rishis you are glorifying the obligation of these rishis. So it is said that in Sanatana Dharma, there are three obligations which are very important. One is the Devaruna, the Rishi Runa, and a Pitruruna. These are the three debts which everyone has to pay. But a neophyte devotee using this verse like a brahmastra can immediately just brush away all the relevance of the rishis. And I don't care about rishis because I am chanting Hare Krishna. I am a great soul. So I don't care. I am free from all the obligations. So just so that we know that this should not be the right opinion, Prabhupada very nicely in the earlier purports includes personalities such as the six Goswamis and including Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also as rishis. Now, which devotee can say that I am not obliged to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as a rishi? No, nobody can say like that. So everyone is obliged to this Pitrur. But I just wanted to emphasize on one thing. And you know, we are taught that Vishadapi Amrutam Grahyam Amedhyatapi Kanchanam. Wherever you see something which is of essence, you can take it. So I came across something which was very nice. And I always thought that, you know, who can actually appreciate rishis? So people who are maybe very strong about the theistic culture of India, they will glorify rishis. But there is somebody whom I came across, popularly known as an atheistic person, a very rationalist person, glorifying rishis in a very amazing way. And please don't think that I am propagating some sort of a nationalism or something like this. But there is this wonderful poem, and those of you who came from a Maharashtrian background, they know this poem very well. It's a poem composed by a great freedom fighter known as Veer Savarkar. Also popularly known in India as being a rationalist and not being a very strong theist per se, or agnostic in opinion, like agnostic of God. In this wonderful famous poem, it's called Sagara Prana Talmalla. Many of you must have heard this poem. The last verse of this poem is so amazing that he is telling the exact same thing which Srila Prabhupada has been repeating in many places in many of the books. And when I found that similarity, I said, wow, he's being an atheist for a specific reason. That reason is because when people become too much of theistic, they just, you know, they misuse the power of theism. And he wants to stay away from it. But here, if you read this verse, he's actually explaining something which is very nice. And then we'll come with the connection of that with this verse also. What he's saying in that, and it's very nice, because it's when I thought about it, I said, wow, this is great. So in the last verse of this poem, He's actually addressing the ocean, and in fact the entire poem is also addressing the ocean only. Is really the explaining the separation of somebody who has been far away from the motherland, India, and far away there in Britain. And he's actually on the shore of this Brighton, the place called as Brighton, and he's, that ocean is there, and he's addressing the ocean. And anyone practically who has been a good nationalist in his life will hear this poem, they will have tears in his eyes. It's very beautiful. So in this last verse, very spiritual and very pertinent, he's actually challenging the ocean. So he is warning the ocean. He's saying, oh, my dear ocean, you are looking at me, you are laughing like this. So because the waves, they make a lot of sound. And whenever the waves come, they also create a lot of foam. So that foam is like the teeth. Somebody is just showing teeth and smiling. So he's comparing that with teeth. And he's saying, oh, ocean, you are smiling at me and you're laughing at me. I know why you're laughing at me. Because you consider my motherland as very weak. Man matela abala mhanuni fasavishi maza vivasanase teshi. He is saying like this, because you consider my land as very weak. But have you forgotten, my dear ocean, have you forgotten this fact, that one suputra, one good son of this motherland, his name was Agasti. And he says, if you continue, ocean, like this, looking at me and laughing, kathila Agasti sa atare, I will go and I will complain to Agasti Rishi. And what does Agasti Rishi can do? Jo achamani eka pali tuja pyala. This Agasti Rishi could drink you, and this particular sentence is known as a Shlesh Alankar. Shlesh Alankar means one word having two meanings. So he's saying eka pali tuja pyala, that means Agasti Rishi could shrunk you to the size of an achman spoon. The pali which is used in achman. And also it means, pali means kshana, that means time. So Agasti Rishi could drink you in a flick of a second, reduce you to the size of an ocean and drink you. And he's saying this is just one son who could do like this. So don't laugh at me. So what are we trying to understand here? Right? That means these rishis to whom this knowledge is entrusted of the Vedas, if you take shelter of them, and he is saying, Abalana majihi matare, please don't consider my motherland as a very weak thing. Why? Because we have the rishis, and we have the knowledge given by the rishis. And that's what Srila Prabhupada has been telling us. That the technology that you are very proud of, right, and so many other things that we are so proud of, but that's not the real asset of your nation. The real asset is the knowledge given by rishis. And what is the power of that knowledge? The power of that knowledge, that when you take shelter of these rishis, in the world we are facing multitudes of problems right now. Multitudes of problems, and that's what scriptures tell us. Kaler dosha nidhe rajanasti he kamadva. The entire world is made up of full of problems, and currently we are going through this pandemic, another huge problem, massive problem. But what is your real strength? The real strength is the knowledge given by rishis. And what happens when you take the shelter of the knowledge given by rishis? No, it's like the bhavam budhir vatsapadam. The entire ocean of problems become like the eka pali tuja pyala. It becomes like a water contained in the hoofprint of a calf, or water contained in the pali. And that's what he's telling there. So somebody who is agnostic and probably glorified as a not so theistic person, he is telling you that, my dear citizens of this world, citizens of this country, the real asset that you have is the rishis. And the knowledge given by the rishis, that is your power. So nowadays there is talk of India becoming a superpower. So we want to make India a superpower. But, you know, Savarkar is saying and Prabhupada is saying that India is already a superpower. Because just one sun is enough to drink the entire ocean. And now, do we have only one rishi like that? No, there is another Jahnu Muni who comes in the pastime of Bhagirath. He drank the entire river Ganga. And not the river Ganga which is right now. The river Ganga when it actually started coming from the jatas of Lord Shiva. What must be the power and what must be... There is several thousands of megawatts of electricity generated by Ganga right now. By the hydroelectric power plants which are right now there. So can you imagine the power of Ganga? And at that time what must be the power of Ganga? And Jahnu Muni just drank the whole thing up. Another son of this motherland. And it doesn't end here. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, there is another person. Now here we are talking about Angira Rishi, This Angira Rishi actually was later on married to the daughter of Kardama Muni. Her name was Shraddha. From Shraddha, there were 6 children born. 4 of them were girls, and their names are there in Srimad Bhagavatam and the dynasty there onwards. One son is Brihaspati, that is the Guru. Second son is another Rishi called Utathya, and his Utathya Rishi also was one of the Rishis who came to attend the narration by Shukadeva Goswami. And his Utathya Rishi, his wife was one day kidnapped by Varundev. And just to teach a lesson to Varundev, he drank the entire ocean of the all entire world. So how many sons you want? So these are the super powerful people. They are already there. Now, if you, nowadays, you know, even among devotional circles, you know, we know these superheroes from Marvel comics, we know the superheroes from DC comics, and you know, I will not name all of them now, but you know, but all these superheroes exist. But to this day, not a single comic writer has ever thought of showing a superhero who can do this particular task. Who can shrunk the entire ocean and make it of the size of a pali water and then drink it in one. There is no such super. Do you think of anybody? Is Batman able to do it? Superman? Any of the comics, movies, what you have learned about? Iron Man? Hulk? Anybody? No one. Right? And those are just imaginary people. These are real people. And not one or two of them. One after the other. So what more you want as a superpower? These people are existing and they are giving the knowledge. This knowledge is entrusted to them. And now, here, there is one particular... What is actually the real superpower of these superheroes, which are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam? And that Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about. And we will just take one superhero which is mentioned right now in this book. And his name is Angira Rishi. And it is mentioned that the knowledge of Atharva Veda was handed over to this Angira Rishi. Now, because there was not much to speak in the small purport, but there was this name Angira Rishi, and I wanted to know more about this personality. So I myself studied it. And he's amazing. So practically, right from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where we hear about the sages coming and listening to Shukadeva Goswami, then about, you know, the various dynasties of coming from Manu and all those descriptions throughout the fourth canto, where Narad Muni is talking to Parchini Barhishat, and Narad Muni speaks about Angira Rishi there, and then in the fifth canto, the Jad Bharat is supposed to be the descendant of Angira Rishi, and his father is supposed to be descendant of Angira Rishi, and then there is the description of Shishumar dolphin, where the entire planetary systems are explained, and Angira Rishi is sitting on one of the tails of this dolphin, and like that you go on talking about Angira Rishi. He's there in the first canto, he's there in the third canto, he's there in the fifth canto, he's there in the sixth canto, most notably through the pastime of Rudrasur. And then he's there again in the ninth canto, describing in the story of the descendants of Amrish Maharaj. And he's there in the tenth canto, in 3 pastimes of Lord Krishna, Angira Rishi is there, including the most famous pastime of Vidyadhar. He was, you know, and we'll come to that point later on also. And then again, he's there in the 11th canto, where the sages were performing tapasya in Dwarka, and where the princess in the Yadu dynasty were cursed. Again, one of the sages was Angira Muni. And again, his appearance is there in 12th canto. And in fact, in 12th canto, wherever the reference of Brihaspati comes, they talk about, you know, him being as Angira Saha. That means the son of Angira. So, everywhere. So, Angira Muni is quite a powerful personality. And Srila Prabhupada goes on explaining the glories of this sage in various places. So Angira Rishi, why first of all he has the name Angira? Because he's born from Angar. Angar is like the cinder. So when you make a bonfire or you're cooking, for cooking you make some fire which is made up of coal. And after the fire is extinguished, you see those coals very red hot still burning. They're known as cinders. So in one pastime it is mentioned that Lord Brahma passed on his semen on this cinder of fire, and through that Angira Muni was born. So he's born from fire. He's a very powerful sage. He was one of the 10 sons of Lord Brahma. So there it mentions that how you know, through ears Pulastya Rishi was born, through eyes Atri Rishi was born, and through the deliberation of Lord Brahma Narad Muni was born. So these are all the 10 sons of Brahma, Lord Brahma. One of them is Angira Muni, who is born through the mouth of Lord Brahma. He is also one of the Saptarshis. We already heard about him sitting on that tail of that Shishumara dolphin in the planetary creation. So very, very powerful and great personality. He is also a Prajapati himself. Not only that, he is also supposed to be spiritual master of Lord Shiva, where Lord Shiva is supposed to have learnt the science of devotional service from Angira Muni. And in this particular context, which Narad Muni is speaking to Prachinibarhi king, he mentions that there are authorities of Vedic scriptures, and one of them is, you know, he says me and he gives certain names. One of them is Angira Muni. So definitely a very powerful person. But his special connection to two things makes him a very pivotal personality in the sixth canto pastime of Rudrasur. And probably this one angle you may not have noticed, so I just said that let me make a humble attempt to present that. So we all know the pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj and how he was so desperate to have a child of his own. And Angira Muni comes there. But before we understand this, we have to understand how Angira Muni's appearance in that particular pastime is just so perfect. Just like, you know, when Srila Prabhupada appeared in the United States of America, the time was just so perfect. There was one offering which Shyamalan Prabhu gave some time back. And he mentioned this point that there was some legal rule by which a person from outside country could not enter United States for some reason or something like that. And that rule was waved off for some time. And it is just in that time Srila Prabhupada entered. Right? For Indians only it was there. Oh, sorry. So that time, just that, thank you Prabhupada. So just that time Prabhupada entered in United States. Just like an apt entry. And how was the situation in United States? The situation was that there was a counterculture going on. The frustrated children of the West were looking towards East for some solution. They were getting deceived. They were getting cheated. Today only we were hearing this lecture of Srila Prabhupada in the DT room. And sometimes we feel, you know, why Prabhupada is speaking so heavily against yoga? You know, and devotees don't understand. Because we need to understand that the yoga was used as a means of cheating people in the West. And Prabhupada had to take them off that cheating. You see, it's like, sometimes, you know, you don't understand why Prabhupada is taking such an extreme, you know, about demigod worship. Prabhupada takes an extreme step in his purport. Because these things are actually being misused. Just like, you know, you have a paper roll. So sometimes, you know, paper roll, because you want to read the paper roll somewhere in future, you make a roll of it. And then after 2-3 days, when you want to make it straight, it doesn't become straight. It again becomes a roll. And it keeps on becoming a roll again. The natural situation of paper is to be straight. But because you already rolled it in one direction, it remains like that. And you know, it makes difficult to read that paper. So what do people do? They have to roll it in the other direction. So that then it becomes straight. So whenever a saintly person takes an extreme step, you have to understand that he's actually unwinding it. Unwinding the previously done wrong windings. Right? So he has to unwind. Because natural condition is being straight. So just to make you straight, first you have to take it to the other extreme. Okay. Then you slowly can become to the point of being straight. So that's how you have to understand. So Prabhupada, very heavy. You know, nowadays they have started something called as sex yoga. What is the sex yoga? Today only we heard. So what is this nonsense Prabhupada says, yoga for sex life? Nonsense it is. Right? Because yoga means yam, niyam, asan, pranayam. So everything is there to control. Where is the question of having that? Prabhupada is trying to explain that point very strongly. So coming to this point that how... So Prabhupada made entry exactly at the right time. Similarly, to understand how the entry of Angira Muni in the pastime of Chitraketu was just so apt, it's very interesting. First of all, we need to know the situation of this personality, Maharaj Chitraketu. So definitely every person wants to have a child. So he also wanted to have a child. Nothing wrong. No, you need to have a child. But somehow, whomever he would get married to, that turned out to be a barren woman. And then he went on marrying and marrying and marrying and marrying and marrying, taking chances, you know. And in that whole effort, he married 10 million wives. That's really a lot. I mean, probably this is a Guinness Book of World Record. Even in Bhagavatam, I don't think more than that number anybody has done. 10 million. In fact, one of the devotees was recently sharing with me that he was discussing with another office friend of hers, Mataji. And that Mataji was saying that, you know, she came out with this topic of Punarjanma, reincarnation. And somehow because she had read the story of the wonderful book of Prabhupada, Coming Back, there are three stories. And Prabhupada talks extensively about Maharaj Chitrakedu's story also in that. So in the way of just narrating, she said, yeah, you know, Maharaj Chitrakedu had 10 million wives and, you know, but she wanted to go ahead and come to the point of reincarnation. But this lady who was hearing, she said, 10 million wives? I don't accept only. She just got stuck there. 10 million wives? So you can imagine what I'm just trying to say is that it's a shocking thing. Nobody has 10 million wives. But he just went on. You may ask a question that how is it possible? I mean, because we have heard so many motivational talks. You know, even Edison tried something for 1,000 times or whatever, 99, and 1,000 times he was successful. And the Wrights brother tried something for 23 times and 24th time they were successful. But here all motivational speakers, they fail the test because 10 million something, I mean, nobody has the capacity. Nobody has a lifetime to do it. So he must be somebody from Satyayuga where the lifetime was approximately, because you want to marry somebody and then, you know, prove that actually it's barren, you need to wait for some time, right? So, and in that, if you would have gone, you probably need lifespan of 27,000 to 30,000 years. I was just calculating it. Like one per year, one marriage. So 10 billion marriage will take how many? So 10 million marriage takes approximately 27,000 years of lifespan that a person needs to have. So that means this story must be from Satyayuga times or something like that. But he actually went into that. He actually did it. He was very serious about it. Now we may ask a question that how can, I mean, this fails all the statistics. I mean, how can there be 10 million barren women in this world? I mean, it fails all calculations and everything. So, I was listening to one nice, interesting discourse, and so some of you may not like what I'm saying, but yeah. This was a person, he's actually a very famous astrologer. He stays in Orissa. I'll tell the name, his name is Sanjay Rath, a very famous astrologer. So, there was one seminar in which he was speaking. The seminar was on inputs of astrology in Vastu. So maybe devotees don't like both the topics so much. But anyway, but this, what he was saying was very interesting. So he was giving an example. He said that, you know, I was talking to one person. And he said the dasha and the positions of the planets in his chart was such. He said that no matter how many houses you want to go and find out, you will never get a Vastu compliant house. So this person was shocked. He said, even if I look for 1 million houses, even if I look for 10 million houses, he said, yeah, you will not find it. He says, why? He says, when you are going out to look for a house, when you are going to a website to look for a house, when you are going to a broker to look for a house, you know, the planets are also coming with you. They're also with you. And you'll be seeing that, and there may be a perfectly Vastu compliant house which is there, just near your side, but the planet will not allow you to look in that direction. You know, he'll just move. Now people will say, this is all rubbish, I don't believe it. Because we call these things as planets. And a planet is a very, very superficial term. It's not even a proper term. The reason why the name planet was given is because of those of you who have studied a little bit of astronomy. It's not because of the planets sometimes have something called as a vakri. It's called as a retrograde motion. So because sometimes the planet moves in this direction and sometimes it moves in the other direction, it's called as retrograde motion. Now, how the retrograde motion takes place, you will have to understand it by understanding the model. I'm sure Pavaneshwar Prabhu can explain you much better. But if you understand the retrograde motion, that means because the planets sometimes move in vakri direction, sometimes in straight direction, sometimes vakri direction, sometimes straight direction. So because they keep on wandering like this, somebody said, okay, they should be called as planets. Because they are not consistent, you know. Look how sun is consistent. It goes always like this. There is no retrograde motion for sun. So sun always goes in the prograde motion. but planets go in retrograde motion. But in Indian astronomy, they are not called as planets. They are called not called as like somebody who is, you know, a vagabond or somebody like that, just bhatakta hai yahan wahan pe. No. They are known as graha. And what is the meaning of the word graha? Graha means something who grasps you. Something who catches you. Just like the story of Gajendra and the crocodile. What is the crocodile addressed as? She is known as graha. Very, very, very few times you will see in the scriptures crocodile being addressed as makar. Very rarely. Mostly she is called as graha. Why graha? Because wo gras leti hai tumko. She just holds you and never lets you go. So similarly, whenever we eat food, the process of swallowing, in Hindi known as grahan, anna grahan karo. So we actually eclipse the food in one sense, as in we just swallow the food. So graha is somebody who just grasps you, doesn't let you go. And whenever you go out, whenever you're on the website, whenever you're going out, the graha is there with you. You know, the rahu is walking with you. Oh, you want to look for something which is good. So similar thing actually happened in the life of Maharaj Chitraketu, we can say. So his grahas were following him. Whomever woman he actually ended up marrying, it turned out to be a barren woman. Right? But the problem, and of course, Bhagavatam mentions it very clear, that he had fertility, he had no problems of fertility issues, by the way. He was quite a powerful man. But whomever women that he would get land up marrying into turned out to be a barren woman. Because his karma was, of course, in a very sophisticated, civilized way, we call it that it's our own karma. Right? But the planets are the actual physical objects through which the karma is imposed upon us. In a simpler way, we can call it as the prakriti, we can call it as the three modes of material nature, we can call it our own karma. In actual practice, it is these personalities who have been given the service of doing this thankless job of controlling human beings and personalities. So now you can imagine, because sometimes, you know, sometimes devotees, often they ask a question, and I have attended a couple of classes on astrology. And if, by default, in the first class, everyone asks this question, but Prabhuji, hum to Hare Krishna chant karte na. Humko ye dekhna chahiye kya? So I would actually, whenever this thought comes in our mind, that am I really influenced by these objects in this world? Am I actually influenced by personalities? We should ask one question to ourselves. Am I influenced by Cupid, Kamadev? Is there anybody sitting in this assembly who can strongly raise his hands and say, I am not influenced by Cupid? There's nobody. I can't say like that. Nobody can say like that. So if we are not free from the influence of Kamadev, how can we be free from the influence of any other demigod? Right? So, the moment you realize, and only you can realize, none of us can realize, the moment you realize that yes, now I am free from the effect of Kamadev, by mercy of Lord Krishna. Yes, that time you are free from the effect of grahas, that time you are free from the effect of demigods, that time you are free from the effect of everything. But as long as the effect of Kamadev is there, it's an indication to tell you, boss, please be humble. There are other influential personalities who are still having influence on you. So be humble. Call out the names of Lord Krishna. You need the mercy of Krishna. You need the association of Vaishnavas. Because there are these people who are always grasping you. And it's not just one of them. There are nine of them. And in the schools, we always heard this story that, you know, sun is a star and then the rest of them are planets. But according to astrology, even sun is a graha. Because sun is also grasping you. He has his own role to play. So all of them are grahas. This is a slightly more depth. A definition having little depth, not just that the motion of the planets or the illumination of the planets. So, now you are in a situation where there is absolutely no other solution. You already tried your best. 10 million wives have been married to. And he must be thinking that, oh, I have made a fun of myself, you know. I have just, probably people must be mocking at him. You know, kya hai, das, 10 million wives, you know. And he must be feeling that, you know, this has to be, I have to do something. The only hope for me is miracle. The only hope for me is a miracle because nothing else is going to work. And just at that time, Angira Muni goes. Now what is Angira Muni? His speciality. So In Bhagavatam, he says, Angira Muni, so we know he's married to Shraddha, but before marrying to Shraddha, he also has two wives. One is Swadha and one is Sati. And both these two wives are very important. One of them, in Srila Prabhupada mentions in one purport, Swadha, she has accepted Pitaras as her children. Right? Now, who are these Pitaras? We talked about the Pitru Rund. So the scriptures say, a good progeny always comes by the satisfaction of Pitaras. So here this person, and of course, yeah, another question can be asked. How is it that somebody can be father of Pitaras? Because Pitaras are my own ancestors, right? It's not like that. There are certain demigods which are also called as Pitaras. And I'm quoting this from Harivamsh Puran, by the way. So I personally read it. It's there. And I can show you the verses. So, when one performs Shraddha ceremony, you actually please your ancestors. The presiding deities of these ancestors are the Pitaras who are staying in the heavenly planets. When your ancestors are pleased, these demigods become happy. When these demigods become happy, they give nourishment to moon planet, to moon. And when the moon is nourished through the merciful rays of the moon, that moon impacts your progeny, it impacts, he impacts your wealth, he impacts your sanity of mind and everything. So when Lord Krishna is talking about the evam pravartitam chakram, he is saying that first you perform sacrifice, the sacrifice will please demigods, the demigods will show favorable blessings on you. This is just one small loop which also exists somewhere in the corner, not much spoken about. But by performing Shraddha ceremony, the Pitaras in the heavenly planets are pleased. They give nourishment to moon god. The moon god gives nourishment to living entities. Through the happiness, through the sanity of mind, and the two most powerful planets in anybody's Janma Kundali are sun and moon. The two most powerful demigods to whom you can see with your naked eyes are sun and moon. And it is the moon who is actually nourished by this ceremony, which is given in the Puranas. I am just narrating it. Angira Muni is the father of all the Pitaras who are in charge of progeny. Right? So now you can understand the importance of Angira Muni going there. Because it could have been any other personality. Or even Narada Muni himself would have gone. But Angira Muni is going. It doesn't end here. The second son of Angira Muni from Sati is the Atharva Veda personified. And how does the Atharva Veda stands out itself apart from the other four Vedas, other three Vedas? Is the Atharva Veda is accepted as the Veda having magical formulas in it. It's a Vedas of magical formulas. All different magical formulas. And the most important formulas are of improving your health and improving your diseases. They are there in Atharva Veda. And Angira Muni is the devout follower of Atharva Veda. It's a science of magical formulas. Now you can understand that of all the personalities, why Atharva Veda is given to somebody who is devotionally engaged. Because something which is very powerful, something which is very magical, if it lands in the hand of somebody who doesn't have devotional background, it can be easily misused. Just like Brahmastra also was handed over to, the most suitable person was Arjuna. Because he had that balance. He would never go to any extremes. Because of his balance, Brahmastra was given to him. Similarly, a devotee, you know, Yukta Hara Viharasya Yukta Chesta Chakram. Krishna says that a devotee is balanced in his life. So because of the balance, Angira Muni is able to handle the power of Atharva Veda. And so now you can imagine a person who has all the magical formulas, the person who is the father of all the Pitaras, he is entering into your palace and you are having the problems with progeny. Oh, so that's just a perfect entry. So, Chitraketu Maharaj said, oh, and he was very humble. Of course, now, Angira Muni in another episode, we know that he actually went to, this is in ninth canto, that he went to one personality, his name was Rathitara, another king. And Rathitara then, he also had problems of having children. So, Rathitara requested Angira Muni to have children in the womb of his wife. And Angira Muni had many children. It's there in Srimad Bhagavatam. Obviously, that technique was out of question because the wives were all barren. So that was not going to work. So only thing that was going to work was some magical formula. So Shataketu Maharaj said that, please do something, Angira Muni. So Angira Muni, now you can understand the core strength of a Rishi. How a Rishi is actually managing the whole thing. So Angira Muni said, okay, fine, I will perform a sacrifice for you. So Angira Muni did a nice sacrifice. It is mentioned that the sacrifice was offered to Tvashta, who is another Prajapati. Right? So Tvashta, by Tvashta's blessing, they got some nice sweet rice. The sweet rice was then given to the chief of the queens of Chitraketu Maharaj. Her name was Kritadyuti. So she received the sweet rice. By the power of the sweet rice, when next time Chitraketu Maharaj was able to offer his semen to her, she actually was conceived with a nice son. But before that, Angira Muni gave a nice word of caution to Maharaj Chitraketu. He said, this son will be the cause of your greatest happiness, but also will be the cause of your greatest distress. In short, what Angira Muni was telling Maharaj Chitraketu was the same verse from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, where Lord Krishna says, Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate adyanta vanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So he was trying to tell the same thing. He was saying that this same happiness will be the cause of misery. Chitraketu Maharaj was not able to understand it. The reason why it will be misery is because it is adyanta vanta kaunteya. It has a beginning and it has an end. That is a problem. Right? So question is actually generally asked. Should devotees not really try for any happiness? Should a sadhaka never try for any happiness? No, that is not the story. A sadhaka must try for keeping his body happy and healthy and try for happiness. But there is something which is very, very important. That quality needs to be cultivated. And that is the quality of gratefulness. Unless a person has gratefulness, he will not be able to digest happiness. And he will not be able to satisfied by the happiness. Recently we were listening to these offerings. Mukund Prabhu is here speaking about his father. Takes great pride. And I was actually trying to help tell Mukund Prabhu that, Mukund Prabhu, why don't we try any alternate medicine? He was suffering from cancer. And I never got the answer that why his father is not inclined for trying alternate medicine. But when I heard all the offerings, I came to know. Because he said that I am satisfied. There are no desires left. Right? He was fully satisfied. There's nothing else to be done in life. How can a person reach to that stage? Because there is gratefulness. Because whenever the desire is fulfilled, Krishna will fulfill your desires. But if there is no gratefulness, that will lead to another desire. It will lead to another desire, another desire, another desire. And then you become like Ravan. That is what is condemned. That is what is condemned. But when you have gratefulness, the desire is fulfilled, you feel happy. Ah, now I don't want anything. I had a desire to have a car. Krishna gave me a car. Now I'm happy. Now I don't need to have an Audi. I don't need to have a Ferrari. I'm happy. But only if you have gratefulness, this is possible. Right? And that's why Krishna says, Adyanta, and that's why this is the cause of the misery is because there is lack of gratefulness. That's what one thing we need to understand. So Adyanta Vanta Kaunteya Nateshu, and he told the same thing. That, you know, okay. But actually it was not in his karma also. But somehow, by magical formula, Angira Muni could arrange it in such a way that he got a nice son. And then, ultimately the son died. And we know the entire pastime of how the other queens became envious and the son died. Right? And then Angira Muni and Narada Muni could come there and give the right amount of instructions to Maharaj Chitraketu. Something which is very nice that actually happens afterwards, and it is mentioned in this story, is that even the queens of Chitraketu Maharaj, when they heard from Angira Muni, they gave up the ambition of having children. It is mentioned like this. It is a powerful and shocking statement. How is it possible? So this actually shows the power of devotional service and the power of gratitude and the power of humility. It is mentioned that if there's a shloka, Shukadeva Goswami says that shloka in the Bhagavatam, that the queens were able to give up their ambition of having children. And they actually went on, I think, the bank of Yamuna River, and they started performing austerities for committing the sin of killing this child. And they perform austerities, very ardent austerities, to get rid of this particular activity. And even they attend the higher destination. I'll just hold this thing here for a minute. And let's go to another pastime. This pastime actually comes in Krishna book. And I will just speak about this pastime and we'll end there. So, when Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, was followed by that serpent. And then Lord Krishna went and he just kicked that serpent. And from that serpent then came Vidyadhar. Vidyadhar narrated the story of how he became a serpent. And he said that, actually I was cursed by Angira Muni. He said, I laughed at Angira Muni because he was looking ugly. And therefore I was cursed to become a serpent. And now by your mercy, I have got delivered. So the point to be noted is, whether you are cursed by a great devotee or whether you are given a benediction by a great devotee, ultimately you land up in the same situation, is that you become a devotee of Krishna. And if you read the entire pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj, later on when Lord Shankarshan was satisfied and he appeared in front of Chitraketu Maharaj, Shankarshan Bhagwan says that you have been able to achieve me because of instructions given to you by Angira Muni and Narada Muni. So he actually clarifies, he says, you have reached to this point because Angira Muni came in your life. Right? So what was actually Angira Muni able to do by the power of his, this is the real superpower of a great devotee or a great rishi. You see, all of us also, we try to fulfill our desires. We try to fulfill them. And Krishna many times fulfills those desires also for us. The problem with that is that we become attached to what we get after that. Right? And that attachment then delays the progress towards the spiritual elevation. That attachment is the only problem. So what Angira Muni was able to do, so typically somebody would fulfill the desires by following Vedic scriptures, get attached, suffer the reactions of that being attached, and again next life, again do something, again suffer the reaction, and at one point of time he says, oh my God, I've been suffering and doing this for so long, there has to be something beyond this. So Angira Muni, by his power, was able to reduce all that repetitive enjoying suffering into just one small pastime. He reduced it into one child, enjoy that child, suffer from that child, and become self-realized. That was actually his power. He could understand this. Chitraketu Maharaj is a very nice person. He's a very devoted person. Right? Why does he have to go through this entire process? Right? Let me speed up the process for him. And he did that. That is the causeless mercy of Acharya. It's the causeless mercy of Acharya. Right? That happened in his life. He sped up the process. In one life only, he went through the happiness, he went through the distress, went through the frustration, went through the self-realization, went through the process of devotional service, achieved perfection. That is actually the great benefit or the superpower that rishis are giving us. Right? And that's why personalities like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the Goswamis are also mentioned as rishis in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada actually gave us a process by which we can speed up the entire process. Right? There's no harm in finding happiness, but one needs to cultivate gratefulness. One needs to cultivate attachment to Krishna. One needs to cultivate attachment to devotees of Lord Krishna. And through that process of cultivating attachment to Krishna, cultivating attachment to devotees of Lord Krishna, one's hearts become very soft. And then you're able to digest the happiness that comes to you, you know. Otherwise, it's very difficult to digest happiness. Right? Misery is definitely painful, but sometimes the happiness becomes more challenging, more difficult to digest. Success becomes more difficult to digest. But if there's a mercy of devotee, there's a pleasure of devotees, there's attachment to Krishna, and there is a grateful heart, then one can actually digest the success also. And one can actually understand and utilize this power, superpower that has been given to us in the form of the purports by Srila Prabhupada and by the great Acharyas. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, are there any questions we can take? Otherwise, thank you.